Jesus and his disciples and his mother, they were invited to a wedding. And they were there, they're enjoying the wedding, they're celebrating with the couple, they're having a good time. And then what happened? Jesus' mother, she comes up to him and she says, hey, they're out of wine, okay? So that's not really a life-threatening thing to run out of wine at a party. However, in this context, that would have been really, really embarrassing to the family. It would have been really embarrassing to the bridegroom. And so Mary notices this. She brings the problem to Jesus' attention. Now, I find this so interesting, and I've been thinking about this all week. I read this story, and I just felt like God kept telling me, read it again, read it again, read it again. And so I was reading, and I started thinking, why did Jesus' mother feel so compelled to share this with him? Why did she find it so important to share with Jesus that they had run out of wine? And how, and she felt so compelled to share it with him. Why then, how did she think he was going to react to that information? Like, why did she feel it was important to share it with him? And what did she anticipate that he was going to do or say? She must have thought he was going to do something. Otherwise, she probably wouldn't have brought it to his attention, right? And so I started to think, like, okay, so Jesus, this is the first of the signs that we see in the book of John. There's seven. This is the first of the signs that we see. And so had Jesus done something like this before, right? Why would she have been so compelled to share it with him? Had he provided in this way, maybe growing up? Is this something that she had seen him do in their own home? Because he's saying, hey, it's not my time yet. It's not my time to show other people. But had he moved in this way growing up, it could have. Is that in Scripture? No. Is it reading between the lines a little bit? Yes. But I'm thinking there's got to be a reason that Mary knows that saying something to her son is going to cause a reaction. So I just started really thinking about this. You know, we're never going to know that, but it's just something that really, you know, sparked me to start thinking, had he done something like this before? So his mother, she brings this concern to him, and she doesn't ask him to act, right? She doesn't say, hey, this is the problem, and you need to do X, Y, and Z to make it right. She just says, hey, I noticed that there's a problem here. There's something missing. And Jesus responds to her. He says, hey, it's not my time yet. And I wonder, what did Jesus mean by it not being his time? I asked myself a lot of questions this week, and maybe we'll end today with more questions than answers. But I asked myself a lot of questions as I began to read this week, and it just really spoke to me. So many times do we see things a lot of times, and we think, oh, there's the problem. And we expect and feel that God should move, right? We bring a request to him, and he doesn't react in a way that we think he will, or answer in a way that we think that he should, right? But perhaps he's saying to us, hey, it's not my time, right? It's not my time. And so there have been so many times throughout my life when I see a need, and it's a need that I think is so important and so significant, and I want God to move quickly, and God has chosen not to do so, right? I've said, hey, did you see this over here? Did you see what's happening? And expect him to jump right on it and do what I think he should do. And God might say to me, hey, don't you know it's not my time yet? So this could be what he's saying to Mary. She's saying, hey, did you see this happening over here? This is important. And he's saying, hey, wait, it's not my time yet. Or maybe God does choose to move. He does choose to react, but it happens in a way that I didn't think that maybe it should. It might be a way that I didn't expect. So Mary, she saw this need, and she brings it to Jesus. She didn't ask him to do anything. She just simply said, this is the problem. And Jesus, he didn't say no. He just simply responded, hey, it's not my time yet, right? And so she brought him the need, and he acted on it. I wonder if Mary wouldn't have brought that need before Jesus, if she wouldn't have pointed out, hey, we're out of wine, would Jesus have responded anyway? He may have. He may have chosen to meet the need, even though she didn't bring it before him and bring it to his attention. He may have also saw that there was no wine and provided that for the party to prevent the family from embarrassment. Or was it the fact that his mother brought the need to his attention in hopes that he would respond and meet the need? Is that what prompted the movement? And so wine at a party to us, it doesn't seem like a big deal, especially as Nazarenes, right? We don't see that as a very big deal. But in this time and in this culture, if you ran out of wine, that was like the ultimate embarrassment. And so the need was brought to Jesus, and he met the need. So I don't want to stretch this story. So as I'm telling you these things and as I'm telling you my thoughts, please, I don't want to take this out of context. I just want to share with you some thoughts that I'm having. So I don't want to add them to the story. I don't want to interject them into the story. But these are just some things that I was working out throughout the week. So how often, I made this connection, do we see a need and we don't take it to Jesus, right? We see something that needs done. We see somewhere where we feel like God's action would make a big difference, but maybe we think it's not important. Maybe we think it's insignificant. It's not something that we should bring before Jesus, and so we don't. And then we wonder, why didn't God move? Why didn't he put his hand in this? Why didn't he do what I thought he should do? But we don't realize is that we never took it before him. We never said, hey, I see this. Does that mean that he doesn't see it? No, because he's all seeing. But there are times when we may see things that we should be bringing before Jesus so that he can act and so that he can show us his movement. So if we were simply to bring these needs before him, he may choose to act, right? He may choose to do something new in that situation. And that was really, really an interesting thing that came to my mind as I was reading this, is that Mary brought this need before her son, and he acted upon it. She didn't say, hey, here's this thing happening, and this is what I want you to do about it. She just said, hey, here's this thing that's happening, and Jesus acted upon it. And so his mother also, she didn't explain to him the path that she wanted him to take to make this right. She didn't say, there's no more wine. I want you to do X, Y, and Z to bring it to us. She just knew that he was going to have a plan and that he was going to do something to make this right. She didn't have the solution. She didn't have, you know, all of the steps to get there. She just knew the need, and she brought it before Jesus. And so sometimes, I was thinking about this connection, as believers, we see a need, and we bring it before Jesus, but we already have a plan about how we're going to fix it. We already know what we know what he should do. We're like, you know what? I see this need, I see this problem, and I would love it if you would fix it like this. You know, and so when we do that, we might be missing out. We might be missing out on simply bringing it before the Father and allowing him to say, hey, thank you, and I'm going to do it like this. And we can't even imagine how much better that's going to be than the plan that we've already concocted in our head, right? Or sometimes we don't bring the need, and we try to fix it on our own. We say, oh, this is just a little thing. This is insignificant. I don't really need a lot of help to fix this. This is one I've got by myself. You can come with me, but I think I can fix it, right? And so we do that sometimes, and sometimes it works out. I mean, right? Sometimes it works out. But sometimes it becomes a big, giant mess. And then we have to go back and say, oh, I guess my ways weren't the best ways. I should just be handing this to you, God, and allowing you to move in a way that only you can. And so, you know, we can't come to Jesus with our solutions already. We can't come to Jesus with our plan for how it's going to be made well. We simply need to be like the mother of Jesus and say, hey, this is a need. I trust that you're going to handle it. You don't need my directions. You don't need my, input on how I think is best. I'm putting this in your hands, and I'm going to trust that you're going to move in a way that I could never even imagine that you are going to move. And so I know I've been a victim. I've been guilty, not a victim. I've been guilty of doing that, bringing a request before God and telling him the remedy to the problem. And then asking him, hey, now here's how I think I should fix it. Will you enable me to be able to do that? Maybe as believers, if we would surrender our own thoughts and our own ideas to the way in which we think about things, we would leave room for God to give others the signs that point the way to the Messiah. Because we know that this is the first of the signs that was pointing the way to Jesus in the book of John. And would it have been so significant if Mary wouldn't have just said, here's the need, and then let him meet it? Maybe not. You know, maybe not. And so because of her surrender and her showing this and stepping out of the way, Jesus was able to move in such a significant way that it began to point the way to the story of Jesus. In his timing, he was able to move in a way that people could begin to see the movement of God. So Jesus' mother, she brings the concern before him, and immediately Jesus begins to give instructions. He sends the servants to go get the jars, so they go get them. These jars that he asked them to go get were the jars that were meant for ceremonial washing, right? And so he tells them, fill them with water. And then he instructs them, now take these jars to the master of ceremonies. There's a whole different, all these different descriptions of master of ceremonies, you know, master of the banquet. Each translation says it in a different way. But basically, this is the person that's in charge of all the food, all the drinks, and all the music at this party. And so if the wine is gone, this person is in huge trouble, right? So he sends it to the master of ceremonies and says, hey, you need to take the first drink. Now, before Jesus sends the big gallons of water to this master of ceremonies, does he taste it? No. He just says, be obedient to my direction, do these things. The people did them, and the result was that the master of ceremonies tastes the what he may presume is water, and it's wine, right? And he says, hey, this is the best wine. This is so good. And he even calls the bridegroom aside and says to the bridegroom, hey, most people, they don't put out the best stuff last. They put the best stuff out first. And that way, when people aren't really paying attention towards the end of the party, they aren't aware that it's not the best. But you have saved the best for last. Now, what I think it is very interesting in this section of the passage is that Jesus chooses to use the vessels that were used for ceremonial washing. These vessels would be something that was set apart. This is a very, very, very important part of the Jewish culture. It was a very important ritual that they practiced many times a day and in many situations, and it was very important to do so in order to be considered clean. And so what we know, and maybe what we don't know about Jewish culture, is that every little thing that they do ritualistically or religiously, any of these things, it's not just to be done. It's not just because God said, these are the rules, you have to do them. They were in place for a purpose. Everything they did was meant to set them apart from everyone else. And they were set apart from everyone else so that they could point the way to the coming Messiah. That's the whole purpose for the people. That was their whole reason for existence. That's the whole reason. Their rules were not just because God said, do this and don't do that. He said, I want you to do this and I don't want you to do that. So that people will know that you're different. So that when Jesus comes, they will know it. And they will know it because you will be the people that are set apart and pointing the way to him. And so these jars that were set apart, that Jesus chose to use, were something that was set apart for a very specific purpose. And Jesus chose to use them outside of their intended purpose. He used them for something different. As I began to read this, I thought, why did he do that? Would that have been, would that have been offensive? I don't know, maybe. You know, people are like, why are you using it for that? That's not what those are for. Those are for this. You weren't supposed to use those to do this. They're for something else. And so I started to think about this, and I started to think, you know what? God intended those jars for good. And he intended those practices for good, and he used them for good, and they were a great thing. But I have to wonder, did Jesus choose to use those to say, you know what? God intended this for good. He intended all these practices for good. He intended all of these practices to point the way to who I am. Now, I am here, and I'm going to do something new. I'm going to change the way we do things, not in a bad way, not because the way we did things were bad, not because in the way we did things, you know, we're not going to do anymore, but because we're going to do something new. And in doing something new, people are going to be changed. Good things are going to happen. New things are going to happen. And so Jesus, he used the vessel of one of those practices to perform something awesome that ultimately confirmed Jesus and pointed the way to the Messiah in a new way. Right? He is challenging all the way along in the Gospels the way Jesus came, the way he is presented to the world. Everything that Jesus is doing is challenging the way that they've always done things to make room for something new. Doesn't Jesus still do that? Isn't he still challenging the way we've always done things in order to make room for something new? And you know what? We might see the need as Mary saw the need. We might present it to Jesus, and then let's be like her. Let's step back and say, what are you going to do, Jesus? What are you going to do new here? What are you going to do in a way I couldn't expect it to be done? And so I think that's so powerful when we think about these vessels that were used for ceremonial washing, to make people clean, to make it so that they had the ability to worship with one another, that Jesus said, hey, I'm going to do something new here. I'm going to flip things upside down, and we're going to change the status quo. We're going to do things we've never done them before, and people are going to get upset, and they're probably not going to like it. Years ago, there was a book called Who Moved My Cheese? Did anybody read it? Right? Who Moved My Cheese? And it's what happens is when people are always used to doing things the way they've always done them, you know, they get stuck in the same patterns, the same routines. It becomes a religious practice in their life, right? And it kind of loses its meaning. But then, watch out, when somebody decides we're not going to do it that way anymore, everyone says, no, we have to, it's the way we've always done it. But when Jesus came, he said, hey, these things aren't bad, we got to do something new. We can't keep doing things the way we've always done them. We have to flip things upside down to make room for a new creation. And so Jesus is saying to step away from simply participating in religious practices and tradition and living life. He wants to begin living life among the people because this is a path to redemption. So Jesus, he'd been shown the need, right? He'd been shown the need. He acted and he met the need. And when the servant took the wine to the master of ceremonies, he tasted it. We've already, you know, kind of talked about that. And he responded in saying what? He responded in saying, you have saved the best for last. You have saved, the good stuff for now. So, however, you know, Jesus, he knew that was going to happen. He knew he had given what was best. And so he didn't just provide the need. Jesus didn't say, hey, it's embarrassing that you're going to run out of wine. I'm going to give you some more. He said, I'm going to give you something better than what you have expected. He didn't just fulfill what his mother had asked him to do, but he went above and beyond by creating something better than what was previously there. And isn't that just the way that Jesus moves? He doesn't just fix things. He doesn't just say, good enough, right? He doesn't just say, okay, you brought this need before me, I'm going to fix it. He says, I'm going to make it better than it ever has been. I'm going to make it better than what you could even imagine. He doesn't just meet needs. Jesus makes things new, right? He redeems and he restores and he makes things, you know, better than ever. And you know what? I even begin to think about this. In the very beginning of creation, God created the world. And at the end of each of his creations, he says what? It's good, right? This is good. It's And even in some parts of scripture we read, it's exceedingly good. It's exceedingly good. And then those things became broken, right? They were still good. God still created and they were still good. He created people. We mess things up. He still calls us good. He doesn't regret creating us. But in sending Jesus, he says, I created this, right? And it's exceedingly good. But guess what? It's going to be better. It's good. And when I created it, it's good. But when Jesus restores things, when he makes things new, now what was exceedingly good is even better. And we can't even imagine what that will be like, right? Because Jesus began this journey of restoration at the cross. But he hasn't completed it. So think of this. Where has Jesus brought you from? He's brought some of us from some pretty bad things, right? Some of us are like the jars of ceremonial washing. We were good. Maybe we weren't a whole big mess. We were good and clean and pure things. And even in coming to our relationship with Jesus, he still did something new in our life. You don't have to have this, you know, really sketchy story for Jesus to do something new in your life. You can be something that was doing a good thing, was fulfilling its purpose, and then you allow Jesus to restore you and use you for something new. And so I think when we think about this, you know, we think about how, you know, what God created was good, even exceedingly good, but he's going to make it better. And he does that through Jesus. He does that through the sending of his son. He does that through our sacrificial living, through our surrendering of ourselves so that we can be used as vessels to do something new. And we do this by seeing a need, by presenting that need to the Father, and then listening to his instructions. When we do that, when we show him the need, we allow his movement, we listen to his instructions, he creates something even better than we could ever imagine, right? And so the action of Jesus at the wedding, it did not go unnoticed. People saw what happened. You can imagine that those servants were chattering among themselves. And because of that, you know, those stories were shared with other people. And so what he did, he didn't stand up on a stage and say, look what I'm going to do. Look at this awesome thing I'm about to perform in front of you. No, he quietly moved. And then people saw the movement of God and they began to speak about it. And as they began to speak about it, people began to say, hey, who is this guy? And even some began to say, this is the Messiah. And they began to recognize who he was. And as they recognized who he was, they began to see the movement of God. And because they began to see the movement of God, some of them became a part of it. They became a part of it. And they allowed their lives to be changed by Jesus. And what happened? Fruit was produced. Good fruit. And it just really starts the ball rolling. And so when we think about this, that is true today. It was true then, and it's true today. And it's true today because when we present these needs and God, and we take them to God, and he begins to give us instructions, and we begin to live that out in obedience to him, people begin to see the movement of God, and they begin to talk about it, and they begin to whisper about it, and they begin to share it with others, and they begin to see that, hey, who is this guy? This is Jesus. This is the Messiah. And because they see this, lives are changed, and lives are transformed, and fruit begins to come about. And so this is true then, and it's true today. And you know, Jesus is still doing new things. He's still acting upon the requests of his people, and he continues to make his presence in the world known. And as believers, we have to continue to show Jesus our needs, right? We have to continue to show him our needs. We need to continue to show him the needs of others. Now, he can see them. He knows what the needs are. He knows the state of the world, right? He knows the mess it's in. But he wants to use us to fix it. He chooses to use us to be his hands and feet. He chooses us to say, this is the need. God, how can you use me? How can you use me to do something new for you? And so we need to continue to do this, and we need to continue to allow God to use us, and we need to be obedient, and we need to listen and surrender, and then allow Jesus to give us his instruction. not interject our own instructions, not interject our own ideas, but to be ready and willing to hear what it is that Jesus would have us to do and then take the steps to do it. And then be obedient like those servants were. Don't ask questions. They didn't ask questions. They just said, okay, we're going to listen to you and we're going to do it. And as a result of it, they saw something really awesome. And so that's what Jesus is calling us to. He's calling us to obedience. He's calling us to take the steps that he asks us to take. And then he's going to do something really cool. And the best part is he lets us be a part of it. He lets us join him. He allows us. He wants us to join him. He doesn't want to do it on his own. That's not why we were created. We're created to live in community with God and with others. And so how exciting that he chooses to use us, and how exciting it is that he desires to hear our requests, and he desires for us to share with him the needs of ourselves and the needs of others. His plans are best, and the outcome of putting our trust in Jesus and remaining obedient is going to result in the very best. Let's pray together this morning. Heavenly Father, we come to you this morning, and we thank you once again for the opportunity to come and to be together and to hear from you. Father, I ask that you would continue to speak to each of us. You would be able to speak into our hearts in ways that we can hear, and that we would begin to just act in the ways that you would have us to. So as we present the request to you, and as we present needs to you, Father, that we would sit and that we would listen and that we would hear your instructions and that we would be obedient to them and that we would be able to see new things happening. That we would be able to be a part of your movement in the world, God. We know that you are still moving, that you are still active, and we thank you, Father, for allowing us to be a part of it. I ask that you be with each person here this morning, that you be with each individual that's in this room, those that are not, those that may be watching online, God, that you would continue to give each of us opportunities to share the love of Jesus this week. In your name.